April 1 meeting?
Second.
All right, we got a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Ayes have it. Item number two is public comment. Anybody have anything they'd like to say? We give you 2 minutes to come up and tell us your story or whatever you'd like. Everybody good? Coach, everything good? All right, so we'll go on to item number three, employees' years of service recognition. Steve?
Good morning. Well, thank you for being here this morning. We are excited to welcome Jackie. Jackie, if you can come up front to recognize you for 5 years. Becky Lawson. Darren, I know I'm away from the microphone, but I wanted to stand over here to recognize her when we did. So,
our committee here. So, Jackie Lawson has been working for the town of Mount Pleasant part-time. Actually, she started part-time in 2011 and as a front desk at the Park West Pool. She also served as a mail courier for us for a while. And then she went over to the Senior Center and started working at the Senior Center as a customer service rep over there. She has now been there full-time since 2014, been there 5 years for us. She enjoys gardening. She's lived in Mount Pleasant here for 20 years. She has done a great job for us, always welcoming everybody over there with a warm smile and providing excellent customer service to our folks at the Senior Center. I know they enjoy coming in there and seeing you in the morning and be able to say hello. So we want to have a
pin for you, and I have checked up in the mail for you.
Wanted to congratulate you on 5 years of service to the Panama Pleasant.
Thank you, Steve. You know, I'd like to take this opportunity to recognize the principal of Oceanside. She came in and sat in on our meeting, Ms. Corley and Coach Greer, AD over there. So welcome. Thank you. We love to see you all here. All right. Item number four is review of the arts inventory study. Who's got that one?
I've got it right here. Yeah, we are an arts inventory study was conducted by the College of Charleston, and here to present it this morning is Assistant Professor at College of Charleston, Dr. Kate Kenny.
Dr. Kate, how you doing?
I'm sorry.
Yes, Kenny, that's Kenny, all right.
I thought.
Kenny, that's fine. Good morning. My name's Kate, and we conducted this research with the Riley Center at the College of Charleston. So thanks for having us do this. We were really enjoyed working on it, and I'll go through some of our highlights, our findings, and recommendations today. I believe the council members received our full report previously, and then we'll certainly leave time for questions as well. Great, so I'll just start off with the scope of our inquiry, what we were setting out to do. We really worked from about the fall timeline to now to assess the unique assets and needs of the arts community in Mount Pleasant. So this report comments on what is here, maybe what are some of the deficits, and we also examine the support structures for artists. What do artists need to be successful in their work? So just a couple of our research questions here to start us off. We know that artists do not work or exist in isolation, so it's really important to think about the entire community in Mount Pleasant and how they are supporting the artists and the arts community. And there are many ways that artists need to be supported through validation of their work, having a level of some sort of audience demand or people interested in the arts, certainly through material supports like funding or facilities, training opportunities, having some sort of network or community, and also having access to information about their profession. So these are all things that artists need. It's not just maybe grants or buildings or that sort of thing that you might be familiar with, but there are many ways that artists rely on the supports of their community. So that's sort of very important to framing our study. Some of the opportunities and challenges that artists might be facing here in Mount Pleasant, again, some foundational knowledge to framing our study. A couple of opportunities. There are already some existing stakeholder groups that are really interested in advancing the arts in the community, including some very active new members of town council who are interested in advancing the arts. We also see communities outside of Mount Pleasant that are nearby that could be friends of the arts or audience members, particularly the islands east of the Cooper. And there are a lot of private resources here, right? Financial and non-financial resources. The demographic makeup are ripe for supporting the arts. A couple of challenges in Mount Pleasant that might be the artists might be facing or arts organizations is the cost of development here, right? So can artists afford to live and work here? And that's a common problem in many communities. And also, there are no higher education institutions immediately in Mount Pleasant. That's often a place where we see artists being employed or having facilities or some support structures or an opportunity for partnership. So that's something that we don't have immediately here. Again, just some opportunities and challenges framing this study. We completed two approaches to finding information around the arts. The first was an arts inventory. So what are the existing arts organizations or prominent artists? We looked at facilities. So what's kind of here already? And there we could say, well, maybe what are some of the deficits or what does that look like? What does the arts community look like? And we also completed several phone interviews with community leaders in order to develop and implement a community questionnaire. So we distributed that questionnaire to 161 people. We got a 52% response rate. And we used both the inventory and the community questionnaire to come up with some major findings and recommendations. So first, just talking briefly about some of the findings from the inventory. And contributing to our understanding or the profile of the artists or the arts organizations here, we found a lot of our entries were individual artists as opposed to organizations, and the majority were working or teaching in the visual arts. And this could be explained a little bit in some of the communities that already exist here, some of the people who have strong networks or connections already to artists, and some of those are visual arts, but that is a large piece of the pie here in Mount Pleasant. Cultural organizations were second, and then educational groups were the third largest type of group here in the arts community. And here, figure four, we try to understand maybe where the organizations are located, if there are high concentrations of arts activity happening in Mount Pleasant, and that's what you see here in figure four. This is just a screenshot from a longer table, just so that you understand that this is a piece of the report, if you're interested in seeing more. But we did want to understand what were the existing recreational facilities. And we didn't make site visits, and we worked with the recreation department to understand what was going on at these facilities. But what kind of facilities already exist? Parks, you know, public places for art, or performance or installation. And I know the recreation department is really open to providing these facilities and interested in learning more about how we can exhibit the arts or have performances happen. Our inventory did not include schools and churches. So those, of course, are often places where we see artists performing or exhibiting their work. So that would be an addition to our inventory of the recreation facilities. So again, learning a little bit more of the profile of the Mount Pleasant artists and arts organizations, an equal proportion of full-time and part-time artists completed our survey. And then we also saw a lot of amateur artists. We also got a lot of comments about seniors who are interested in working in the arts here or consider themselves artists in the community. And 75% of our survey respondents reported that their income from arts-related activity is under $50,000 a year. So some of this information that we found about how much they work, how much income they derive from their work as an artist, and income levels helped us to describe this community as maybe a semi-professional arts community, or maybe people who are working in the arts in addition to other careers. Many of our respondents said that they work and live in the town of Mount Pleasant, but you'll see on figure 11 on the left here that only half of them really consider Mount Pleasant to be their primary arts community. So the artists here are moving around, working in other places, and you know, that's pretty common in this area, but just so we know that artists do consider organizations, collaborators, or audiences outside of the immediate Mount Pleasant area. And how often do you engage in your art-related work outside of Mount Pleasant? Again, this is gives us a understanding of artists' mobility moving outside of Mount Pleasant. So the next two slides help us to understand support mechanisms. So we were on the questionnaire, we offered 11 support mechanisms. And this first slide, we asked the respondents to rank what is the most important mechanism to you. And they were asked to rank their top five support mechanisms. And performance or exhibition space received the highest ranking, followed by events, and then rehearsal studio and workspace. So again, just in an ideal world, what are the most important things that you need as an artist? And then after that question, we asked them to share their level of satisfaction with those same 11 items. So the first slide is just in an ideal world, what do you need? And then the next question was, you know, share your level of satisfaction with what exists here. So participants not only ranked performance or exhibition space as the top support mechanism in the first question, but they also expressed the highest level of dissatisfaction with that. So that's a gap that we probably need to think about closing moving forward in one of the major findings of this study. We did ask a couple of questions specifically about arts facilities because we know that that's something that has come up, you know, before our study even. And residents have asked, you know, for more space to do their work, perform. And so table four, we see some satisfaction with arts facilities, again, existing arts facilities on the dimensions of availability, affordability, suitability, and quality. And we do see some dissatisfaction with what exists here. And again, we wanted to ask specific questions about facilities, again, as a lot of residents have already asked about that need prior to the study. There are a couple of questions about, well, what do you think that residents, how would they support an arts facility, and how would you support an arts facility as an artist? Do you think that people would, if there was a new facility or some sort of different facility than what you have, is that something that people would go to? Is that something that you would use as an artist? And so we do see, yes, Mount Pleasant, residents of Mount Pleasant would certainly support an arts facility. Yes, as an artist, I would be interested in using a new arts facility as well. So again, just gauging some of that level of demand. So a couple of lessons learned. So I'll talk about lessons learned and then move into two recommendations. We learned about the profile of the arts community. We learned about what support mechanisms we have and maybe what are some of the deficiencies, particularly related to arts facilities. And then a third lesson learned is really around the desire for more arts opportunities. And I think this is why we're really at a pivotal place here. There is an appetite for the arts. The demographics suggest that this community should have a larger arts presence. And I think that's sort of half the battle. The appetite is here. So again, the profile of the arts community, we might describe this as a semi-professional arts community. 36% of respondents note that they work as full-time, and 53 describe themselves as part-time or amateur. 62% of respondents note that they derive less than 25% of their income from an arts-related activity. And again, a lot of comments from seniors around a desire for the arts as well. In terms of the mechanisms, the support mechanisms, particularly but not limited to arts facilities, there are numerous instances of arts activities happening at existing facilities here, but if only a few of these facilities would be suitable for some other types of performance. Even amateur performance, some of them are not suitable. Certainly there are not facilities that would be very suitable for professional arts organizations that are coming in or maybe touring. And again, reminder, we did not do a deep dive with churches and schools. So certainly we asked the question about access, right? We know that there are a lot of existing facilities, so even one way to address this would be to think about ways to improve access points to existing facilities as well. And then point number three, the desire for more. Again, the demographic information, the questionnaire responses about the appetite for the arts here really all signal that this community could support, wants to support artists and arts organizations.
Ma'am, I have to ask you, we got a lot on the agenda, so if you don't mind.
I will advance to our recommendations. We had two final recommendations. The first is around leadership. So something that we could think about is how the town can better support arts organizations and all the ways that might happen. The Americans for the Arts offers a lot of information about what these structures, our governance structures, look like, how public and nonprofit and private entities collaborate to support with the arts. So that's an opportunity for the town to maybe rethink about how that's happening or best working. And secondly is around facility report. So certainly there is a gap. There is a gap and a need for facilities, and the town should consider aiding private or nonprofit organizations and some collaborative effort, maybe a mixed-use facility, as we saw demand for visual and performing arts. It's not surprising that this community at this time is feeling this need compared to other national information. Communities of 10,000 or more often have some sort of arts facility, and we certainly have examples here. But this is another area to develop in partnership with the private and nonprofit sectors as well. Thanks for letting me know about time, and we're happy to answer questions. My colleagues are here as well.
Okay.
Thanks.
Any questions from the committee? Any comments? I'll tell you, I think the arts are great. I took Gibbs Art Gallery back in the 70s, and I had a ball. My art teacher is still around. I still run into her periodically. And not only that, but I know Bennett Hospitality is getting ready to build a 3,000-seat amphitheater over there by the Yorktown. So I think we have some things that are coming just a little bit slower probably than what we'd like to see. But certainly I think we all agree that the arts are very important, and we'd love to see more. I'd like to see, like a dinner-type theater where you could go and have some dinner and see a play and things like that. So I'm excited about it. I want to see the arts grow tremendously if we can.
So maybe my question's for you. So what do we do?
Well, I don't know. We've been talking. I know GM's been involved as well. We've had some conversations with them. We talked about being able to do more at the high schools since they have the facility there where we could put on plays and things. I think there are some things that we can start doing, trying to find maybe some of these restaurants that have outdoor facilities where we can put on plays or do some things. And I think we got to really crawl before we walk, but I think trying to encourage some of that kind of stuff is great. I know that we had the Crab Pot Players down here for a while. I went to some of their plays, and I thought they were great. But if we could do that in conjunction with some of the restaurants and some of those kind of things to start to get the ball rolling, I think that would be great.
I think you did a great job, a really good job. But what it looks to me is it says the biggest need is facility support, and that there are arts organizations out there that if they had a facility in which they could do things, it would flourish. They would flourish, we would flourish, and the town would benefit from a good arts program. So I guess at the end of the day, we're going to have to decide whether we want to be in this game or not. And I like your thoughts of, you know, that doesn't mean run out and build a whatever, the Satilli Theater. But it could mean being creative with leasable space or whatever. But I hate to keep asking it, but it's on us. You know, we got to figure this out. Mm-hmm. We've got to figure out what is it we want to do? What is it we want to recommend? What is it we want to do? We're about to talk about spending $3.9 million for something else in recreation. Mm-hmm. So I guess it'd be important for us to find out where this falls on that totem pole, you know?
All right,
Jim? Well, I think, sorry, I lost my voice over the weekend, but I think that, you know, our town has some broad recreational facilities. The focus has been on athletics. We have so many fields and, you know, ball fields, which is fantastic. But I think the arts and the arts community is one area where we've been lacking, that we could have more offerings in that space. And I think that as we move forward, we should look at where in our future plan an art facility with this mixed use that has performance and studio and rentable space that artists could use, and we could create a sort of a thriving you know, center for the arts in Mount Pleasant.
Absolutely. You know, we have that land on Rifle Range Road that we've got. I think we have a plan already, kind of conceptual plan, but that doesn't mean we can't make some changes into it. But we did say that we were going to have a room there where they could do some arts, right? Some I'm not sure what type of arts it was, but
there is a, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
There is a program room scheduled in a facility, but it's more, it's similar to what you would find in a program room such as the Jones Center or Park West. It's not necessarily a theater for performing arts presentation, more so for children who are taking a camp, but to be able to put on a presentation to their parents at the end of the camp, sort of thing.
I feel like we have had the conversation we're having right now, and we didn't know what to do. So we hired the experts and said, what do we do? And they said, you have this, you have an interest. We need to have facility support. So that's, we got our answer. Thank you.
And I mean, this facilities, the arts require subsidy, right? There's going to be subsidy from somewhere. So I would certainly encourage you to move forward in partnership with other entities to figure out, you know, a spot or the best, you know, mixed use facility, or who would be interested in supporting this going forward. We did not do a financial analysis of you know, level of income and that sort of thing here, but that's certainly the trend in facility development now is a partnership approach.
Well, I think that if we had a location and we had a plan, then we could go out into the community and say, look, we are looking for partners to join in and have our big donor wall or in the naming rights or something like that, to where we could have, you know, a robust facility. But, I mean, we subsidize our rec department as it is, with, and so this is just one more, you know, component of that.
Yeah. Well, like I said, the good news is the cavalry is coming with the amphitheater. Maybe we can partner up with Bennett Hospitality and be able to work with them some on that as well. But I think our best opportunity is probably going to be Rifle Range Road, being able to maybe redesign it such that we can do what we want to do with the camps and all that, but also be able to have some arts. Anyhow, great discussion. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you very
much. We appreciate it. We'll continue discussing about it, and hopefully we'll come up with something. All right. Item number 5, Carolina Park Phase 3 update.
Yes, thank you. Good morning.
Thank you, Steve.
We have a Carolina Park update. As you know, we've been in discussion with Oceanside Collegiate Academy and Seaman Whiteside for design, taking a look at Carolina Park, kind of a change to the master plan over there to include a stadium and artificial turf field. And Lee Gasly is here this morning. He's going to be presenting on that. So,
Lee, batter's up.
Slide. There you go. All right.
The floor is yours, Lee.
Kind of shows. All right. Good morning, everybody. Lee Gastly with Seaman Whiteside and Associates. As Steve said, we've been coordinating on this next phase of Carolina Park for several months now. And basically, to kind of orient you, this image on the screen right now that shows the red dash line, that line right there indicates basically the what I would call the impact area of Phase 3, because all of the elements that you currently see within that dash line will not necessarily be built in Phase 3, but parts of them may be, depending on ultimately how we decide to allocate dollars and do different value engineering options. Basically, what we're going to have is we're going to have a new addition to the existing parking. There's future softball fields, future basketball exterior courts right here. There's a linkage road that comes from the existing and new parking around to a brand new parking lot that will be on the far side of a new synthetic full-size rectangular sports field. And then part of the coordination that we've been having with Oceanside Academy is the addition of a 2,000 seat plus or minus stadium with approximately 1,500 or so home side seats and then 500 or so for visitors on the far side. Can you flip to the next one real quick? All right, what this image represents is basically the yellow is what I kind of call those items we have to have. We have to have the additional parking both in the expansion of the existing parking lot here as well as a new parking lot there in order to satisfy parking requirements for the stadium and for the overall facility. And then there's a linkage road that connects the two. Of course, we also have the synthetic field, which is a requirement, and then basically the infrastructure necessary for the grandstands. The purple area represents, and it goes back to the impact statement I made earlier, if you're familiar with that site, it's very low. We've filled a lot of it, obviously, with what's existing out there, and we will have to fill more. So these areas in purple, we're not going to be able to build those fields at this time. We just don't have the budget for it. But we will probably fill them in some manner in order to, one, make sure that we don't have any potential for wetlands in the future, but also make sure that we've got positive drainage and we have some drainage in place so that when we come back in future phases, we can tie into that and raise the fields up to their proper height or their final height. And then finally, the areas in blue are the boomerang shaped basin right here and this basin up in the upper right. Those are existing ponds. We will probably need a new pond in order to satisfy the stormwater requirements for the additional development and possibly some modification of those. We're going to have to conduct a new drainage study in order to determine that. So we know what we want. We want additional parking. We want a stadium or a grandstand area, and we also want a synthetic field. Now, the conversations that we've had with Oceanside is they're going to cover the costs associated with the grandstands. The rest of the infrastructure in the synthetic field is going to be the responsibility of the town. Back in September, we did a fairly in-depth cost analysis of some different development options. And while it's not final, obviously, it was detailed enough at least to give us a magnitude of what we're looking at. So just to share some general numbers with you on that, the kind of what we call the pre-construction and overall earthwork component of that yellow phase is about $1.9 million. There's over $800,000 worth of fill that would have to be brought on to the site in order to elevate it. Roads and access aisles and the parking, $335,000. The parking spaces themselves, around $209,000. And then drainage in the area of $394,000 for around $2.9 million. The synthetic field itself is going to be around $1 million. That would include lighting. It will be a lit field. So that puts us at approximately $3.9 million. We have $4 million, as I understand it, available to do the project. And I will back up. Of course, that number does not include the grandstand, as that would be the responsibility of Oceanside Academy. But as far as the town is concerned, we've got $3.9 million basically already expended, and we only have a $4 million budget. Well, there's two more components that you have to add to that number. Ideally, you want to have contingency on that because as much as we would love everything to be perfect from day one with the drawings, there's always going to be things that pop up. So a good rule of thumb is about 10% of that number. So that's in the range of $400,000. And then also they have what we call soft costs. And those are consultants' fees. Those are additional surveys. That's third-party testing that's required. That's geotechnical studies. It's closeout surveys, all of those kinds of things, and that's going to be in the range of around 10% or $400,000. So at the end of the day, we're probably looking at around $4.8 to $5 million to construct basically the area in yellow right there, plus some level of grading in those areas of purple. We're at the point now that we're We're ready to start construction. We've submitted a proposal for professional services to the town. That still has to go through your bids and purchases process for approval. One other thing, just so you know the numbers, there are currently 190 parking spaces in the existing parking lot. The new addition will add another 107, and then this isolated park there will be an additional 150. So that'll bring the total to about 447 spaces. That should be enough for the parking. If you look at the town's parking requirements, it's what they call a warrant, so you kind of have to prove what you're looking at. But most stadium sports complexes, you park at 1 to 4 seats or 1 to 5 seats. So we're in the ballpark, pardon the pun, with respect to the parking numbers that we're looking at. Schedule-wise, if things were to go forward in a well-mannered pace, we would start construction documents soon. They would be finished by the end of this calendar year. You'd have permitting, start construction in June of 2020, and then the project will be complete in the summer of 2021 or earlier.
Now, Lee, on the way in, me and you had a discussion, and you said that there were some opportunities for us to have some savings.
Yeah, I mean, there are always things that, you know, you can take a look at. Again, that $1.9 million that I mentioned earlier, that was if we had raised everything that's within purple and yellow by 2.5 feet. So depending on as we get into the design, how much we actually decide to fill within these purple areas, that number could come down because we wouldn't fill them at 100%. We might decide that 40% is enough to get drainage to do what we want it to do at this phase.
Tom?
Let's not do that yet.
What?
I don't think we should start looking at what we're cutting yet.
Well, I just wanted to make sure that we understand that these numbers aren't set in stone, that there are opportunities to save some money.
But if he saves money, it hurts the project some. The figures that he – I don't mean hurts the project.
No, I understand.
But if you decrease the elevation, there's an effect to that. And in athletic fields, you know, saving the money in this room doesn't help you on Friday night, you know, after a bad rainstorm. I think we should figure out what this thing costs to do it the right way, and then we need to figure out where we're going to find the money to do it.
I think we have that here, right?
Yeah, but you're...
Well, and also in your packet, there's that breakdown from September that shows, you know, some more detailed costs. But again, that was based on the master plan as we currently knew it. But I think we're in a reasonable magnitude of cost. And, you know, I don't see what we're talking about here coming in at, you know, $6 million. But I do think $4.8 to $5 million at the end of the day is probably what you're taking a look at.
Sure. Chairman, Eric. Yes, sir. Perhaps in order to keep the schedule on track, we proceed with design development and give us another 30 days at next month's committee to start bringing you back options for funding the remaining balance.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
Because we're going to be, you know, we're considerably short sitting here today, but not to jeopardize the time frame. And I think everyone's interest is having the project completed before the 2021 football season. So if you're okay with it, comfortable, let's give us a blessing to move forward on design, and we'll come back with money.
I think that's a good idea. The only thing I would like to bring up is that we should, when we look at this stadium, I think that we should look at it in terms of controlled access. Right now, we have Park West, which is a great facility. It's an amazing facility, but there's no controlled access. You know, you set up a table with and hope people pay or don't stand on the other side to watch. Not only can the school use it, we can use it. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think really looking at controlled access and it being something like that, we should make sure those elements are in there, I think.
Yeah. Coach, you think so? Would y'all like to say anything, I mean, before we go any further? Give you, sure. Yeah, because we want to get you on the recording. So be careful.
Come on up. All right.
We're We're a very appreciative partner of the town, and we enjoy a great relationship. I think things that probably you guys might not even be aware of because we're there every day, but we work very closely with these guys and services and the guys on the boots on the ground kind of thing, and it's a very symbiotic deal. I mean, things come up. We have a soccer tournament, and can we use your park? And sure. I mean, Matt Hansen's been a tremendous resource, but the town's got basketball needs. The town, frankly, uses our gym more than we use our gym. But that's been a great partnership. We're not kind of, but frankly, we're on the upside down side of that, I think, as we've kind of done our math. But it's not about necessarily keeping score as much as it is making sure we maintain a healthy partnership. And the town's been very accommodating to us. But, you know, just an example this week, we've got our girls is playing for lower state championship in soccer tonight. They'll be playing at Charleston Southern. Our boys are playing for lower state championship tomorrow night. They're playing at Charleston Southern. Our baseball team's playing for lower state championship Wednesday night. They're playing at Shipyard. So the opportunity to keep more of our kids and students off the highways and on campus, the community support of having people, not even just the 650 Oceanside families, 92% of which live in Mount Pleasant, but the community at large to come out and support our events. Be wonderful to have them basically on our campus. And again, we still have our 8.2 acres that we've had great conversations about, saying, hey, we're willing to build whatever is most benefit and effective use for the whole community. So we're very proud of the partnership and want to continue it at whatever level possible.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Anything else, guys?
No. Just
do you need a motion?
Yes, that'd be great. Mm-hmm. You're comfortable with this plan, this latest conceptual, and then we'll proceed with getting bid information for design.
I'll move for approval of the conceptual plan and instruct staff to come back in 30 days with recommendations for funding.
Second.
All right, we've got a motion and a second. Any more discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Ayes have it.
Thanks, Lee.
Thank you all for coming. You're welcome to stay to the rest, too. All right, next one is discussion regarding the future of the Recreation Department.
I can kick it off, Mr. Chairman,
if
you're comfortable with that. Council decides the limits of government, and over the last several years, the feeling from a majority of committee, a majority of council, has been to provide limits on the Recreation Department. And resources are finite, and many times those resources that are available have gone to what prior elected officials have considered to be higher priorities, whether it's police department, road construction, you name it. And so, but there, I think there's a different feeling today, and it seems appropriate to have these conversations about what you would like the future of the recreation or recreation, public recreation in Mount Pleasant to look like going forward. So we added this agenda item and to generate conversation with the hopes that the understanding that it may take longer than one meeting, may take several meetings, but with the hope that long term, based on your comments and working with you, we can come back with a plan for the future and what you'd like to see.
Thank you very much. You want to start?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, go ahead.
thank you, Eric and Steve. I think that's a great way to assess the situation. You know, the resources are finite. And I'm not so sure we decide how much recreation the town has or gets. I think the citizens we serve decide that. And one thing I learned at my last job for 17 years was, if people value the service, they'll pay. They'll pay. They'll gladly pay, actually. So I think that I don't think we handle it at this meeting. I don't. And I don't think we hire a consultant and pay $100,000.
We have a consultant right here.
But I think that we should have the discussions with staff, with the people that know. The staff knows this game, and so that we can have some type of direction on this. And I know, I'm pretty sure we don't have a council that's going to just start dumping money in the rec department's table. It's not going to happen. That's okay. We can figure out ways to pay for these things. And So I welcome the discussion. I think it's good, but I don't think it's just expanding upon the things we're doing now. I think it's about other things. We have to have the arts discussion. We have to have, you know, all discussions. And I think there's there's some philosophical things we have to decide first. I think you do an amazing job at satisfying the things that the public does that you're in charge of. So the philosophical question is, are we serving the things you're doing, or are we serving everybody that lives in the town of Mount Pleasant? Because that's two different things. And I'm not sure what the answer is. But I think we should have those discussions, and then once we have these guiding principles, then we can build it. So I'm just saying stupid things up here. But I welcome it. I think we should do it. But more than talking about it, I think the experts should decide, what's that going to be? Is it going to be 30 minutes out of a rec committee? Are we going to set aside some staff people and maybe five citizens and maybe us to walk through this together? Whatever that is, I'm fine with.
Okay. Jim?
I think it's pretty clear how popular our rec department is and how quickly the camps and classes fill up, and there's wait lists and long wait lists, and you know, I'm on mommy groups where people are like, I logged on the minute it was there, and by the time it crashed, and by the time I got in, it was all full, and you know, people were a little frustrated. And I think that's a good problem to have, but it's a problem that we shouldn't have. We should have enough offerings for our citizens to be able to, you know, sign their kids up for summer camp. And I think maybe one of the things, and this is just a small thing, is to have a window of time where rec is only open to residents of Mount Pleasant, because I think currently it's a sort of a free-for-all, and I know that a lot of people outside of our town take advantage of our town's recreation. So if there could be like a week or like a first day where it's just town residents that have the opportunity to do that. I also think that, you know, we need to have a deeper understanding, because I know the rec department brings in revenue through these camps, but how much does it cost, you know, to put on these camps? And are we breaking even? Are we losing money? You know, if we're running our fields out for $50 the first hour, $25 the second, are we breaking even? Are we making money? Are we losing money? And maybe take a look at trying to help the rec department be subsidized a little less, so that it could be more self-sufficient, so that when future councils come on, or if, you know, people focus their focus is on more on drainage or more on the police or fire department, that the rec department doesn't get sort of left in the dust. I think we have extensive plans that are just unfunded, and we just need to find a way to fund them, because I think the rec department does have a plan, and it does have a vision, and it does have, you know, and reading in the comprehensive plan, seeing what those are, you know, the Mount Pleasant Way and Rifle Range Road Park, these are all things that just need a funding source.
Thank you, Jim, and I'm glad you said that, because starting January 1st, we get seven of our fields back, right?
Actually, seven? That'll be in June.
June 1st.
In June. June 2nd, I think, is actually the date that we get five of our fields back.
So that's going to help us tremendously, because we'll be able to utilize those fields, but also, you know, we're going to make about, I don't know, somewhere in the vicinity of, what, $200,000 this year in leasing our facilities out?
We are on track for that right now, and that's part of the program report. We are showing our rentals.
But if it costs us $400,000 to do that, we've gone backwards.
I don't know if it costs us that.
I don't either.
But the point is, we're getting seven fields back now. So if it's going to be $200,000, it's going to be a lot more once we get to where we are able to lease some of these fields out after our programs. In other words, we use them for our programs, and then any time that it's not being used, for instance, Sundays, we don't use our fields on Sundays, right?
Rarely.
Okay, so rarely. That would be an opportunity to lease them out where we can make revenue out of that to help support ourselves. I like what you said, and you know, because I think there are opportunities for us to help support ourselves and be able to do that. We just got to find that mix and to make that work. But right now, $200,000 approximately from being able to lease these fields out, and here we are getting seven more fields, that figure's going to go up for sure. So I think if we look at it and see, I mean, we're already paying Jody's guys to do what they do now. So it's that cost is not going to go up, shouldn't, on us, because we're already taking care of them. Seems to be like it's going to be more and more revenue. Granted, we'll have to have personnel out there probably, but seems to me there'll be a lot more revenue coming in once we get these fields going and we get the river leasing. And so I think we do have good opportunities. And to mention the arts, I don't know how many people in here, Jody, you might remember, but, you know, Alhambra Hall used to have a stage, and they used to have concerts, and they used to have things, you know, plays and things like that. Hugo took care of that. But for those of us who do remember, we used to do a lot of stuff there. I mean, that was like the focal point of Mount Pleasant where everything was done, baseball and things like that. But we did have a stage where it'd be nice if we'd had stage there today. It'd be a great, you know, place to put on plays or concerts and things like that. But unfortunately, we don't. So we used to have it, you know. So anyway, that was a part of it. So, but I agree with you. And I think there is light at the end of the tunnel, and it isn't the train coming back at us. I think it's going to be a good opportunity for us as soon as we get these fields opened up and then be able to take a look and see what kind of revenue we'll be able to get. And maybe it will help us help support ourselves.
So maybe the next committee meeting, you can lay out a methodology or however we'll get there, and we can discuss that.
Perfect. I thought perhaps for consideration either at the next meeting or at a special meeting of this committee,
sure.
We could develop, you already know so much of this information already, but we could develop all the base information for the recreation department, from numbers of participants to revenue being brought in to what's in higher demand and so forth, and give you that baseline again of the information that might, and then have sort of that visioning session afterward. We could do it at a regular meeting. We could do it at a special recreation committee meeting.
Whatever's good with the staff. I mean, we're welcome. But also, I would like to include those seven fields and, you know, five fields. Okay, so I'm sorry. I thought it was seven. Five fields and the estimated revenue. I thought we got two back from Carolina Park and five at there, but it's just fine.
We have two at Sherwood's Flowers and three at Carolina Park.
Okay, there it goes. Yes, I had it backwards. All right, but that's still five. So, yeah, I mean, even if you can include that, because we're going to get them back, and so that's going to be potential revenue for us. I appreciate that. Anything else for the committee? All right. Thank everybody for coming. We adjourn. Oh, wait a minute.
Update.
Do that, Nate? Go ahead. We have time. I'm sorry.
I can be quick on here. You have the numbers. I don't need to go through all the numbers, but you can see we're doing very well in our youth and adult sports. It's going very, very, very strongly. I did want to mention the rental revenue. As you can see, our rental revenue, we are at year-to-date. Between rental, staffing, and lighting, we're at $52,000 year-to-date through the end of April. And in 2018, we had $114,000 total for the year. So we are doing very well in renting quite a number of fields and facilities, and we will be renting more as time goes on with the additional fields that we will be getting back from the field use that will be expiring.
Thank you. I asked Steve to put that on there from now on so we could kind of keep track of that so we can see what kind of revenue is being generated by being able to lease them out so at least we know. Go ahead, Steve.
I think you're on track to eclipse last year very, very, very easily.
Yeah.
So we do expect that to continue to grow. I also, a couple things I just really wanted to mention. First of all, great April. I mean, with the blessing of the fleet, it was fantastic. We had tremendous support from all the departments, fire, police, public services, and just generally the town support of all the employees. We had volunteers out there all day long running everything, and so they are to be commended for that. They did a wonderful job, and I think you saw a lot of people walking away with smiles on their faces at another great event. We had our Easter egg hunts. We do stuff, like I said, on the north side of town. We duplicate them on the south side of town. We had Alhambra and at Park West for Easter egg hunts. We just had a spring carnival last week. It was another beautiful event. So very active. You know, that's on top of all the normal stuff, farmers market and all the sports and everything else that are going on. So very active April. I did want to mention that we have a new employee that I believe is here. Bethany, are you here? Bethany, will you stand up when I recognize her? You can stay standing. Come on, you can stay standing. This is Bethany Levin, and she's moved here to Mount Pleasant recently and moved here in January. She is from originally from Ontario, Canada, lived in central Illinois. She went to the University of Illinois and with a bachelor's degree in organizational communication, and she immediately went to work for the school as a media strategy intern. Following that experience, she opened her own business called Southern Magnolia Events, where she styled and coordinated large events, photo shoots, and weddings. She joined Pavlog Media, a large internet company, in 2018, where she worked in their marketing department until she recently relocated to South Carolina. And she is now our marketing coordinator. She is replacing our marketing coordinator.